Hello and welcome to a New Year's edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us. It is 2017, and for me personally, couldn't have happened soon enough. 2016 was the worst for a lot of different reasons, mostly personal more than anything else. But glad to have you here. Hopefully 2017 will be the best year in a long time. We can always hope for the best. Doesn't always happen for us, but we can hope for the best. And let's operate on that assumption. As you listen, of course, which you are on the second day of the year on the to the Arts Magazine right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you with us. We forge on in the new year. Shows are always opening, always closing. New things are popping up. Things are changing. Change is constant, and we try to keep track of that here on KKFI. We're part of the arts lineup, by the way, here on KKFI. We have Arts Magazine on Monday. Maria Vasquez Boyd has Art Speak Radio on Wednesday, keep you in track of the latest poets and writers. A couple of weeks ago, she even had the owner of a bookstore in Blue Springs on the air with her. And then on Friday, oh, that Charles Ferrugia. He's liable to do anything. Sometimes he touches on the arts, and often he'll talk about other things, too. They cover the garage sale scene really well. I have to give them credit for that. They do that really well. And food, of course, Charles being Charles. But three art shows, sometimes other programs kick in with arts programming. Part of the arts lineup here on KKFI, trying to keep you fully informed, as the late Barbara Chris used to say, here on what's going on here in Kansas City. Well, we're going to talk to our friends at City Theater of Independence during the course of the program today. Interesting show, a very heavy show, a very thought-provoking show. Agnes of God is on there with us to tell us all about it. Ernest Williams, he is the director of Agnes of God. He is a graduate of the UMKC Professional Training Program. We've had some of the instructors from the training program on in the past. We get Ernest's take on this as we go along. He has, dealt with over 50 professional productions in his career. It's probably more than that, Ernest, by now. A lot more than that. Many directing credits, many other technical credits. We'll ask him about acting credits. I don't know that I've ever asked you about acting credits before.
That's because I try to hide them.
Nice to have you with us today. Many credits, as I said, and beyond, here in Kansas City and beyond. The New York Circle Theater, I believe, was one. I recall that from past interview.
I worked with Circle Theater from New York, and I worked at the Pearl in New York as well.
And also in Provincetown, I recall.
I was part of the Provincetown rep, yes.
Yes. So a lot of credits from Ernest here. Glad to have you with us once again. He is directing this production, so I'm sure the cues are really crisp and everything is just picture perfect.
We're getting there.
My past experiences.
We just finished Tech Week, so now it should be pretty close to what it's going to be during the run. And we're working on that, so we have like 3 days of dress rehearsal here to figure out all the little details at the last minute.
Yeah, it's a cast of three people. Two of them are with us today. Linda Levin is with us. She plays the role of Mother Miriam Ruth in the show, and that's a key role in the show. Alexander Rovarosa.
That's right.
I have to say it with an Italian accent. And not being Italian, I have to work at it, of course. She plays the role of Agnes in the show, and they are here to tell us about this very thought-provoking. At times, when it originally opened, it was considered to be controversial.
It still is. There are still Catholic churches put it on their do not produce list. Because of a lot of the issues it brings up are ones that none of us would really like to be attached to, usually unwed pregnancy, particularly of a nun. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the baby is then killed, and we're not sure exactly how that happened. The sister has been accused. But the psychiatrist is hired to find out whether she is of sane mind or not and whether she's fit for trial. And so what ensues is really a religious versus science type of argument what is morality, what is faith, what is truth. Mm-hmm. And they go round and round between the Mother Superior and the psychiatrist, who is played by Jackie Kane, another fine actress and a longtime loyal person to CTI. I am relatively new to CTI, and these ladies have performed there a couple times, but they are not members of the company. And so we're putting together a fun show, sure. We think. It's not necessarily a lot of laughs. There are some laughs in it, surprisingly, but it's a very heavy and a very dark show by the time you get to the end, but not so much until the second act, so you can breathe easy for the first hour.
Yeah, these shows that kind of cross the line between religion and science and all of that. People find that very interesting usually. Sometimes they don't like it, but it is very interesting if you think about it, because that's the basis for a person's belief system, is both of those things.
Right, and that's sort of the argument that the psychiatrist puts forth, is that the mind is her god, whereas traditional religion, the God, the Bible, is what the Mother Superior has, and they fight constantly, not only because of Agnes and what Agnes is going to be, how she's going to be affected by the doctor treatment.
Sure. Yeah. And it's necessary. It's necessary that she be talked to, at least, I think.
Yeah, and it's important for the play to discuss the arguments, I think, and but it's all structured with Agnes singing, and we have a lovely voice from Alexandra, who sings all the music live, and it's taken from the actual mass. We've sort of varied it and tried to find things that are not traditionally used, and have a lot of fun with that. And because she has to sing it live, we can sort of set the pace. So it's a little hard to do a chant fast. As we've discovered, but we've tried to pick up the pace on some things, and she does have a very lovely voice, and that alone was worth coming to see.
Well, I don't have any credits for Alexandria, so you play the role of Agnes.
Yes, I do.
Give me some of your credits so we can get the audience up to speed on who you are.
I've done some shows with Blue Springs and Independence. I was in It's Wonderful Life, the musical, in 2014. I played Mary Bailey. And then I was in Seussical last year with City Theater of Independence, and I was Mrs. Mayor, and I was also in the Playwright Festival. So my credits in community theater are not a lot. I did a lot in high school, and then I took a bit of a break. So it's just exciting to get back into it and do this, and Agnes is just, it's a great role. It's very challenging. It's definitely the most challenging role I've ever done, but it's been great, and it's been a learning experience for sure.
Were you one of those Seussical people who went up to the Independence Square and
yes, I was.
I
yes,
I saw you. Oh.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the rhyming, was that difficult in that film?
It was. But I had a great cast. It was a fantastic cast, and so and I love the work of Dr. Seuss. It's fantastic, and so it was a lot of fun to be involved in that. It was an experience in its own way, but it was definitely fun.
Well, in this show, you play the role of Agnes.
Yes,
everything
I do.
Kind of centers around you and your experience. How do you see Agnes?
I think it's a really interesting role. I think that it's really interesting to be able to get into that, and I identify with her a lot. And so really delve into that and the idea of this person who has basically been brainwashed and basically is acting on this belief system that she was told. And it's just interesting to get into her mind. Sometimes I sit back and I'm like, wow, she's just so warped almost, like the way that she's been raised and what she believes. And so it's fascinating. It's fascinating to look into that and really get into that and try to understand where she's coming from and why she feels like the actions that she takes are justified. And in her mind, they're right. It's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And so that has been really really interesting.
How long has she been a nun? Enough to really be involved? Long time?
About 4 years.
About 4 years, I think, yes.
But I want to not, I don't think I would use the word brainwashed as much. It's a product of her mother who raised her, was protective and sheltered. And though religion, and in this case the Catholic religion, but I don't think it was brainwashed. It was just that was the only thing she knew. And her mother kept her in the house, secluded. And it's that isolation, I think, and that then she was sent directly to the convent upon the death of her mother. So the brainwashing happens indirectly, perhaps, but it's nothing that I would consider
malicious. Yes, absolutely.
Because it's very important. It's just she represents the ideal. Is she or is she not a saint from that purity and that innocence sort of thing? And how could she be this innocent and have killed a baby?
Uh-huh.
And that's what puzzles the doctor as well.
That's one of the dilemmas of the show.
It is.
Which, of course, you have to see to understand. Linda plays the role of Mother Marion Ruth. She recently won the best script at the City of Independence for the Playwrights Competition.
Correct.
Yeah, I did an interview about that. Which script was yours?
It was called The Choice. And it was about a man who thinks he is interviewing for a job. And he finds out that, no, he's really talking to a genie who is going to give him one of his three choices that he had made on a shooting star.
Oh.
And he has to decide which of those three choices is the one that's going to be the most important to him or the best for him.
Had you written other things before that? I assume, yes.
Yes, I'd written one other show that was produced at City Theater of Independence called The Critics. And it was two women in a nursing facility who had a love-hate relationship, and they criticized everything around them, including their caretakers.
Uh-huh.
And as a result of being able to criticize everything around them, they formed a bond. And so that was the first one that was produced there.
Oh, sure, yeah. And had you written for Potluck Productions as well?
I hadn't written for Potluck. I've acted for Potluck.
You've acted there.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember you involved with that. Is there? Linda has performed also. She's mostly known as a performer. Up to now, maybe she'll be known more as a playwright.
Oh, I don't think so.
She's performed at the Paradise Dinner Theater in Excelsior Springs, at the Just Off Broadway Theater, at the Corbin Theater in Liberty, at the Slightly Off Broadway Theater in Excelsior Springs. I like that. They must come on the show.
You'll have to have them.
Yeah. So more Liberty, Kansas City? Sounds like you're
more Northland, probably.
More Northland. Well,
yes,
you live up there. We
right,
would say where.
Right.
You live up north. So,
yes.
At one time, there was three community theaters up north of the river, and now there was just the Liberty groups.
Liberty and Excelsior now is pretty active.
They need a new infusion up
there
north
of
the river.
That's right.
Well, you play the role of Sister Mother, Marion Ruth. Well, maybe that was a fortunate misstep on my part. What's the difference between mother and sister in the nun context?
Well, Mother Superior is really in charge of the convent. She needs to make sure that things are going the way they should be going there, and that the fellow sisters, the other sisters, and the novices, the postulants, are towing the line, mm-hmm. I guess. The young nuns, the postulates, the novices, need to ask for her permission to do things, and she keeps a watchful eye over everything. And so when things happen at the convent, it's on her. It's the buck stops here type of thing for the Mother Superior.
Sure.
Except for the priest or the abbot that would come in, that would be over her.
Sure.
Would be her superior. She's in charge.
So this probably has really reeled her back, this having happened on her watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How does she look at Agnes and the situation?
Agnes is an innocent. She believes she's touched by God. She believes she's favored by God. She doesn't call her a saint, but she's definitely gifted, blessed, and she's very protective of Agnes.
Without giving away too much of the plot, how has this unfolded? Did you know she was expecting? Was that taken by surprise? Can't say, huh? Okay. All right. You'll have to see it to believe it. Were you involved in having the psychiatrist come?
I was not. The psychiatrist was court appointed.
I see.
Agnes was charged with manslaughter. And the court appointed a psychiatrist to find out what's going on in Agnes's mind, whether she is sane or whether she is lucid. But, you know, and so the psychiatrist is charged with that duty to tell the court whether Agnes should go to a prison or whether she should go to an asylum.
Does she see herself? I'm looking now at Alexander. Does Agnes see herself as someone who has done something wrong?
She doesn't remember any of it.
She does not.
And so that is part of it, is she's insisting that nothing happened because she doesn't remember anything that's happened. And so that's part of it, too, I think, for the psychiatrist is figuring out all of that because she's blocked it. And so that's kind of a part of the story as well, is that whole aspect of Agnes remembering or not remembering what's going on and what she did.
Yeah. I'll ask Ernie about the doctor. The doctor, does she have preconceived ideas when she arrives at the convent?
When they arrive at her office, she never goes to the convent.
Oh, okay.
She has issues with the Catholic Church. We'll put it that way. So I would say yes, she does have preconceived ideas in that. But this whole story, the play, is based upon an incident that was reported in the New York Times, I believe in 78 or 70, or the late 70s anyway, about a Sister Maureen, who, had become pregnant and killed a baby in, I don't remember the name of the town, but off on Long Island. And so that had intrigued the playwright. And so he began playing with the themes of and what could possibly do with the actual issues. He says he never interviewed the sister, never talked to her, didn't follow the case. However, there was a book by Catherine Breslin where she went and met with Sister Maureen, and she wrote a book called Unholy Child, which the same conclusions sort of come. They just take different paths.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting read, and the play I find fascinating because of his take on it and that struggle.
Yeah. You wanted to do this particular play?
Well, yes.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, you go through an application process with City Theater, and this one appealed to me, and so I went in, did the interview, and was fortunate enough to be picked, so I don't know how many other directors they had, but I know they had quite a slew of directors for this coming season that we're in the middle of. And I was fortunate enough to land Agnes.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it sounds like this might have been the most difficult one to direct on the season schedule, perhaps, because of the obvious controversial and difficulties in, because you have to have some good actresses.
Yeah, and we were very fortunate. I had a good turnout for the leads and all three of them, and was tough choices, but I think we ended up with the right three.
Did you, looking at Alexandria now, see, the audience can't see me looking. Is Agnes the role you wanted?
Oh, yes, absolutely. When I looked into the show, I just thought this is it. Like, I have to have this role. It's just a challenge, and I enjoy that kind of challenge, and I never had that before, and so I just knew that I really wanted to play Agnes, so I was absolutely thrilled to get the role.
Well, you know that you've succeeded if the audience kind of identifies with you, albeit temporarily, with the character. So there will probably be some people in the audience that will not think well of you. because sometimes their minds don't always cross those lines.
Yeah.
So how will you handle that?
Well,
I know that's a, it's a theoretical question. I know that's difficult, but that sometimes happens. I know actors who have played murderers in a show. And sometimes after the show, people treat them like they're a murderer. It's really amazing. But they're not really involved with the performing community.
I just hope that my portrayal brings across. I have a lot of empathy for her, uh-huh. a lot of compassion for her. I was raised in a pretty strict community, and so I understand that kind of what makes a person that way. And so I understand that, and hopefully I feel lucky because I feel like that has helped me a lot in making the character the way she is and in bringing, because I think a lot of people would come into this role and because she's just really strange and really weird and play her that way. And I mean, some of the times she comes across that way, but I don't see her as being strange or weird. She's a product of how she was raised.
Sure.
And so I'm really glad that I get to do that, and I hope that people will have a lot of empathy for her and really for me I feel like she, it's kind of, not being a parent myself, I don't have a lot of experience, but that idea of I see the people in her life as trying to shield her and protect her from things they've experienced, which I feel like, not having experience, but I feel like that's what parents do. And I know of a lot. I know a lot of people who have done things that have hurt their children, but very well intentioned and really just wanting the best for them, and then having to deal with the product of, oh well, they messed up and maybe they did some things, but. I don't think there's a black and white to any of these characters, and so that's really what I wanted. Hopefully, we can bring across in this show is that just so people can see that even if you've done things that maybe aren't right, that there's definitely another side, and that people can try to have empathy for them, even if you can't understand how that you could ever do something like that.
Uh-huh.
That you could at least just try maybe and get in their heads and try to understand them a little bit.
Did the character's mother want this life for her?
Yes, the character's mother, we learn, had a difficult life and had experienced a lot of things that weren't that great, and so she really wanted to shield and protect her, Agnes, from it. And so the things that she experienced, the things that she went through, were in an effort to protect her, and obviously they didn't, and they kind of backfired.
Uh-huh.
But that was the intention, yeah. And that's the intention of the Mother Superior as well, I think, in this story, is trying to protect Agnes and trying to shield her.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting because the story really shows how just because you have good intentions and you try to do the right thing for someone, it doesn't always mean that it is the right thing or that it turns out right. So,
sure. Now, Linda was nodding her head there.
I think when she said that these characters are not black and white, I think people in the audience are going to find good things and things that are not quite so good with every single character. And I think that's one of the strengths of this play, because we talked earlier among ourselves about who is the villain of this play. And there could be three villains or there could be no villains. I mean, I think it depends on what experiences people are going to bring to this play as to who they feel is right or wrong, or if there is a right or wrong in the handling of Agnes or in the handling of any of the other characters, the doctor and Mother Superior, how they react to each other and whether that reaction to each other is justified or not justified, I think will depend on the person watching the play, mm-hmm. what they will think about that. So I think some people could come away from this play saying the doctor is the villain. They could come away from this saying, no, Mother Superior is the, in quotes, villain. Uh-huh. Or, no, Agnes was totally wrong in this. I think it really will depend on what kind of experience they bring to the play, which to me makes the play fascinating.
Oh, sure.
So I hope everybody comes.
Oh, sure. Your character feels like she's defending Agnes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because yeah. Agnes is special. She is blessed.
Yeah. It was also a major motion picture. I remember Correct. That. And I remember at the time the movie was reviewed on the Siskel and Ebert show. And I can't, I was racking my brain, maybe Ernest can remember.
Tilly.
Yeah.
Anne Bancroft, Jane Fonda.
Yes. Jane Fonda was the psychiatrist, Correct. I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Psychiatrist. And Anne Bancroft was the Mother Superior. And Meg Tilly was Agnes.
I can't remember whether it was Gene or Roger made the interesting comment that he made the virgin birth comparison with Agnes. How do all of you feel about that comparison? Yeah. That's difficult.
That is the question, and that's sort of the heart of the play. The Mother Superior doesn't want to believe in modern-day miracles and describes it as God allowed it to happen rather than divine intervention.
Mm-hmm.
No heavenly spirits descending and no doves or anything like that. But
a slightly miraculous scientific event is what she calls it.
Portending what exactly? How does your character justify it? Having performed myself, I often think like that. In your own mind, how do you see that?
Well, I think exactly what Ernie said. God permitted it.
Uh-huh.
If God permitted it, that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know,
and Agnes can't remember anything about it.
She's blocked it out.
She can't talk about it because she never saw the baby, so she doesn't believe in the baby. That's her words.
She doesn't think the baby even existed.
No.
No, she thinks the police made it up.
The police made it up.
Mm-hmm. But they kept on bringing up black and white, so I guess we should talk about the pink.
Oh, yes. Yes,
probably
pink.
A good idea.
The sisters live in a cloistered society.
They do. Yes.
The characters are cloistered. They are not interacting with the world themselves, which is part of adding to Agnes's innocence. And in my research, I ran across the Holy Spirit Adoration Sisters, which their habits are pink. And so we have gone with the pink sisters instead of black and white nuns. Because the black and white nuns, though they're more familiar to us, they're also sort of, we've already defined them. Where the pink sisters, we're just learning about, sort of, they're just sort of coming to public consciousness. And they spend 24/7, part of the order is always in prayer before the sacrament. And praying for the priests and for guidance and for leading people to the right, to the truth, and that the priests and other clergy are involved in helping that process. So we've chosen to choose that, and so it's a little different look for the production than probably most traditional productions of Agnes of God, and hoping it works.
Yeah, well. Different. I guess you had decisions to make as the director.
Unfortunately, yes. Yes, that's part of the job, and to make sure you're emphasizing the things that you feel will bring the play more into focus for people, and that was one of them. Because I think once you start to study and find out about the Pink Sisters, you discover that they're kind of an interesting clique, and they're very small. They're very select. There's only, they said, 400 in the world, and they're spread out across 90 different convents.
So. Wow. Yeah, there are different orders. Not being Catholic, I don't really understand all that, but we can talk about that further. It's time for our break, and I mentioned movies earlier. Russ Simmons will be here, even though it's a holiday. He'll inform us on what he's seen recently out at the movies, and then we'll be back to talk more about Agnes of God opening Thursday, the 5th at the City Theater of Independence, which is located at the intersection where everything happens in Independence, Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence. More on that when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. Thank you, Russ. Russ brings us his reviews of the movies that are going on. He has two different shows on KKFI. One he does with Susan Sanders, and then Freeze Frame he does by himself. Freeze Frame is always on this program during the break between the hour at around 12:30 and other times throughout the week here on KKFI. Russ Hussle appears Fridays for the most part on Fox 4 News doing movie reviews with Sean Edwards on the show at that time. So welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're speaking with two of the performers and the director out at City Theater in Independence, where they are presenting opening this Thursday, January 5th at 8 o'clock p.m., Agnes of God. The City Theater of Independence is located in the Sermon Community Center, located at 201 North Dodgen. If you zip code, if you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 64050. It's located, of course, at the corner of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence. You can go to their website for more information, citytheaterofindependence.org, or you can call their convenient number at 816-235-7367. Speaking with the director and two members of the cast, Ernest Williams is here. He is the director, and two of the performers in the show, Linda Levin, who plays Mother Miriam Ruth, and Agnes, who is played by Alexandria Rovarosi.
Yes.
Rovarosa. In the show. Not good with those Italian accents.
I just figured it out myself, so you're fine.
Interesting. Interesting. Welcome back to the show. Talking about Agnes of God and all that went in with that, Ernest was telling us about the Pink Order, I guess you would call it. Do you have anything?
The
Pink Sisters. Anything you would like to add to that?
Of course. Well, there are two local chapters of the Pink Sisters. There's one in Lincoln, and there's also one in St. Louis, and both of them are known to be housed in bad neighborhoods.
Really?
That they've been there over 100 years, each of them, and the neighborhoods have slowly deteriorated around them. But they're still there, then they're not going to move.
So. Oh, sure.
Yes, so Linda is dressed as a Mother Superior, and she has the pink habit. Alexandra is Agnes is a novice, or I believe they call her something
a postulate
in the play, and so she is in all white because she has not yet taken the vows.
Oh, okay.
Of everything. I don't remember all the complete vows. I am not a Catholic, but this play has always touched me, and so I feel it's a good story. And then our doctor is a slack suit, sort of an homage to Jane Fonda, but but more to the fact that the world is changing and the power women do not wear skirts and dresses. And
this is true. With things having changed the way it is, things must change for the various orders as well. I'm more familiar with the men's orders. The pink nuns, how are they different from the other groups of nuns? Do we know? Does Ernest know?
Well, they don't wear the, I can't remember the name of everything right now, but they don't wear the clothes, enclosed. Mm-hmm. They do have a head covering, but the neck is open, it's exposed, they don't have whatever that piece is, the cowl, so to speak. But they do have their hair is shaved, so they do wear veils.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even Agnes is shaved. So, I guess they're pretty serious about
that. Ernie did not make us do that.
Oh, why not, Linda?
I can imagine.
Are they considered more strict to the doctrine than the other orders? Or, I say orders, and that's not correct.
Well, the thing that Ernie has already mentioned that really is impressive to me is the fact that they're, quote, on duty 24/7. They are a prayer order. They are constantly praying for others 24/7, and I think that is a very important thing to them, that it's an outward outreach. It's the others that they're thinking about, and I think that Mother Miriam Ruth comes from that. I'm thinking of her. I'm thinking of Agnes. It's all about Agnes. as an extension of what her beliefs are.
Yeah. The show, as I said, opens this Thursday, the 5th of January at 8 o'clock p.m. Performances continue on Friday the 6th at 8 o'clock p.m., Saturday the 7th. At 8 o'clock p.m., you get a slight break. Then on Friday the 13th, isn't that interesting? At 8 o'clock p.m., Saturday the 14th at 8. Then a matinee on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock p.m. on the 15th at the City Theater of Independence, located, of course, at the corner of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence. You can go to their website for more information, citytheaterofindependence.org, or their phone number, 816-325-7367. We're talking with the director and two of the cast of the show. Was it a difficult choice to want to be in the show? Did you, Linda, gravitate to it? You knew it was going to be.
I wanted this part.
You knew it was going to be controversial.
Absolutely, but it is a juicy role. And I thank God for Ernie, because we've had the time to be able to sit down and really talk about our characters, our roles, who we are, the layers of these people. These people are very complex. They're well-rounded. The script is beautiful. The words are beautiful. It is only a three-character play. We are on stage all the time. If you're sick of us, too bad, because we're going to be there. And we do not leave the stage. We stay on stage whether or not we're in a scene, which makes the scenery, the set, unique, I think. And I think the audience will be interested in how that plays out. It all takes place in the doctor's office.
Sure. Maybe.
Maybe. Right. There's come and find out what he means by that.
I describe it as the play takes place in the place between light and shadow. And John Pellmeyer, who is the playwright, described it as the play of the mind. And to me, I tried to think, okay, how can we do that? And he also recommended keeping the players on stage, that they just willy-nilly walk through scenes and stuff. And that they just kind of appear when you need them. And so the easy way to do that, I felt, was to keep the actors there. We developed, there's a circle that protrudes over the front of the stage. It's very slight rake, so it's tilted. It's a very precarious balance, is the idea that we were going for. And then each of the women characters has their own little offstage place. And the psychiatrist has a bench representative of the Bench of Justice.
Sure.
Agnes has a prayer prayer kneeler and a stool, because she's a very simple, very prayer-oriented, very minimal. And that she can sing and pray, that's all she does. And then the mother has, she's older, she needs a little more comfort. So we provided an armchair that has a little bit of a padding. But it's very basic, it's nothing elaborate. And then there's the circle, and then we do have projections, but their projections relate to only things that are in the mind.
Is this a show where the audience will have to make up their own mind based on what they hear?
Well, I think so. I hope so. I mean, you have to make a judgment. I mean, the doctor doesn't know for sure. Even at the end, when it comes to a conclusion, she hopes this is what it is, but she doesn't know.
True. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I think Agnes does for us. And also, I wrote to John Pellmeyer and asked if we could update a few things of the text. And he said yes, so I'm very happy that we're not referencing dead newscasters and stuff. We're representing the world, the changed world. So we now refer to Ellen DeGeneres or Lester Holt and people we know as a and that we don't go, oh, who's that? Oh, I remember them.
Sure.
Sort of thing. And then I think that hopefully that helps pull people in other places as well.
Did he communicate with you anything like, I hope you do the show justice? I'm just curious, since you got to communicate with him, what he had to say.
Well, usually when you write to a playwright, they, if they answer at all, they will be brief, to the point, and all he said was, thanks for asking.
Oh.
I have a feeling people have done it without asking before.
Probably, yeah. Probably. Yeah, and sometimes it's necessary. And this doesn't sound like it probably was.
Well, if you make any changes, you do have to have playwright permission. And so that's the only way you can do it, or you get it from the publisher.
See, it's rare when you get to communicate with the actual playwright. You know, Frank Higgins being an exception, because he's around here.
But it's not. I mean, most of them have websites now that you can drop a line and stuff, and you can get a response, but you're not going to have any real communication. You know, you're not going to get to sit and talk to them.
Yeah.
You, and if you write them back, they're probably not going to respond. But they will respond to things they feel that they're willing to do. And they're much more malleable and workable with a play script than a publishing house is. Because they don't want to change anything. They don't want to waste their time. Get the playwright's permission. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that used to be a very difficult thing to do. I know directors who did write, and you had to physically write a letter, and you had to send it to the publisher. The publisher then forwarded it to the author. They might get it by the time you go up, but maybe not.
Well,
with you actually having an email for him, that made that so much easier. The communication is more instantaneous.
I'm sure it's his business email address. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to sit down and try to write to the gentleman. But I did want to know before we got into rehearsals, and so I sent it off. But I got a response within a couple days. So whereas going weeks before to get something, I knew what before. Before they even auditioned, that we were going to be able to do that.
Now, Linda, being a person who's written a play yourself, what would you have asked him? Had you had a chance to sit down and ask him a question?
Oh, my goodness, what a question.
Or would that have been difficult? Because I know Ernest always wants you to formulate your own character. I know that.
And that's why I haven't watched the movie again.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't want to be Anne Bancroft. Mm-hmm. That's not who Mother Miriam Ruth is. Mother Miriam Ruth is her own entity. And so I don't know what if anything, I would have asked the playwright. I think the way the play is written is beautiful.
You like the words he uses as much as anything?
Yes. And each character is beautiful.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, what about Alexandria? Would you have asked him anything in particular? How would be best to do this? But again, you have to make up your own choices.
You do. And I think with Agnes especially, she has some very unique dialogue and choice of and so I think it is something you have to go in and do yourself and figure out for yourself. It's really fascinating the way each character is written in such a specific way to their own character that it's they're all very unique, and so I think that's really fascinating. I think he's done a really fascinating job with it, and the choice of words that he uses for the characters and that really just bring them to life. There's a lot to work with. It can be difficult. I think Agnes is a very difficult character. It took me a while to get in her skin and kind of figure her out. But in the end, I think he's brilliant. I think it was a brilliant script, and it was fascinating. But I don't know that I would particularly have anything I would want to ask him. Because like Linda said, Agnes is her own character, and everyone portrays it in their own way. It has to find their own person, and so
Now, Alexandra and I did collaborate on the music choices. Some things did not appeal to her. And that's fine. I mean, I was more interested in trying to find music that was unfamiliar to the audience, but still had the text of the Mass and what he includes actually in the script. That you have to, you can provide your own music, but you have to, the text that's used it is the way he wants it.
Mm-hmm. Because the music tells the story as much as anything else.
Yeah, and the music is the Mass.
Yeah, and he has it placed in such a way so that if you're familiar with the songs used in the Mass, and what they say, the translation, they propel the story as much as anything else. They tell what's going on in the story as much as the actual show does. So the music is very important. It's not just a part of the character. It's as much a character, actual character in the show, I think, as the three women are.
So there are things revealed there that
yes.
If you're familiar or if you listen very carefully,
yes.
You could learn.
Yes, absolutely.
We begin with the Kyrie, and I chose an obscure piece of music, but it's a gorgeous piece, I think. And then it goes to the Gloria and the Sanctus. Is it the Sanctus?
No, the Credo's next.
The Credo and then the Sanctus. And so it progresses, and then there's a few diversions that Agnes has picked up along the way that she sings, and she does an Ave Maria, but instead of going with the familiar one, because we've all heard Schubert so many times, is I wanted this to be a little different, something that would come more. So I don't remember who we went with, but we went with a different one.
I don't remember.
And the other thing is I wanted to look at Hildegard of Bingen, who was a nun of a cloister, a head nun, and she is a doctor of the church now, was recently made by, I don't remember which one of the last couple popes. But she was a mathematician, she was a scientist, she was a nun, she wrote music. She may have written the first extant mystery play for the Sisters of the Convent. And so there's some of her music as well. The Sanctus, I believe, is, and she hates it because it's very hard, difficult. It's beautiful, but it's very difficult music.
It is very difficult music, for sure. So that adding to the complexity of the character, it's definitely the most challenging role that I've done so far. There's so much to the character and so much to remember, and then you have the music on top of that. So it's definitely been a challenge. It's been years since I've sang this much music in one sitting, and then to have the character and the lines and all stuff on top of it. So it's a challenge, but it's been really good. I feel like I've really learned a lot through this, so it's been a good experience.
You know, of all the parts you've done, is
oh,
this
yes.
the most difficult?
Oh, my gosh, yes, absolutely. I mean, for the most part, I played, like, girls next door and things like that, which are pretty simple roles. You know, you just fall in love with the
girl
main character.
She just lives in a convent.
It's a different door.
There's a lot of emotional highs and lows with this character, and that can be exhausting. By the end of the show, we're all just like, oh my gosh, it's draining. But it's a really rewarding experience. And hopefully, I hope that people come and see it and that they'll be as moved as I've been. Agnes has brought me to tears so many times. I'm acting just in the moment. And so hopefully that we'll be able to bring that across to other people, too.
What about Linda? It sounds like yours is a difficult role as well.
Yes. Very challenging role, but very beautifully done, well-rounded role. So many layers to each of these characters that, as I said before, I was thankful that we had the time to be able to peel the layers, not like an onion, like Shrek says, but to peel the layers and to find out who these people are.
Oh, sure. Yeah. What's coming up next for you? What you get? by here. Do you have any plays that you're
going to
go
I'm
up
going to
on?
Audition, but I can't tell you anything specific because I haven't been cast in anything yet, but keep at it.
No scripts in the offering?
No, I'm not doing any writing right now. I don't have any time to do any writing with Mother Miriam Ruth. She's taking 24/7 of my time right now.
Well, that's so. What about Alexander?
Senior, I have a lot of audition plans for this summer, but we'll see where they go and what actually happens. Hopefully it'll be a fun summer. But Agnes does, she takes all of my time. I'm working and Seoul, and then Agnes, I'm pretty busy right now, so.
She graduated in the middle of the show.
Yes. Oh. So it was a very busy, going into this and knowing what was gonna take. It was definitely walking right into a challenge, but I like challenges.
From where did you graduate?
I went to Paul Mitchell School over in Overland Park.
Uh-huh.
So I graduated with a cosmetology license,
uh-huh.
and I work at a salon in Overland Park. So,
it's no special hair styles for this particular show.
No, our hair really doesn't show, so that works out.
That's true.
So yeah, so I will not need to use any kind of expertise in that, which is fine with me. I've been doing a lot of that for a while. So,
well, best to you.
Thank
as
you.
Well. What about Ernest? Undoubtedly has things planned.
I do, actually. I have. I go into pre-production and auditions at the right after this one opens for Anatomy of Grey.
Wow.
By Jim mm-hmm. Leonard in Atchison, Kansas, for yeah. Theater Atchison. So
you're doing more things north of the river. Is that by design?
I think it's because they like me.
Oh, okay.
No,
nice to be liked.
It's just sort of where I've been. I work has popped up there and
I see.
Stuff, and sometimes I have to audition, and other times I get invited. So you just sure. never know.
You were in Leavenworth not all that long ago, right? Was it Leavenworth?
No.
It was a theater up north.
Yeah, in Atchison.
Atchison. Okay.
I'd been there before, and uh-huh. they're having me back again. They haven't learned yet. So, and it's another interesting, complicated show.
That's the one group who has not been on the show. I've had Leavenworth, St. Joseph, of course, Liberty.
Well, we can make plans.
if they want to journey all the way down, it's a fur piece up there, as they say.
They might for you, Michael.
Glad
you
to know.
You never know.
Agnes of God opens this Thursday, January 5th at 8 o'clock p.m. Performances continue on Friday the 6th at 8 o'clock, Saturday the 7th at 8 o'clock. Then we jump over to Friday the 13th. Is anyone superstitious here? Linda says no. Friday the 13th at 8 o'clock, Saturday the 14th.
Yeah. You're right.
Really? There's a saint for that? I know there's a patron saint for...
Isn't there for everything?
There's a patron saint for drug dealers, because I know a lady who did a documentary on
that. Oh, my.
She appeared on the show. Saturday the 14th at 8 o'clock p.m. and closes on Sunday the 15th, a matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. at City Theater of Independence, located in the Sermon Community Center, named after Mayor Sermon of years ago, 201 North Dodgen Street. If you MapQuest, the zip code is 64050. It's located, of course, at the corner of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence, citytheaterofindependence.org, and the number to call for questions. They'll have to get you back, of course, 816-325-7367. A very interesting, thought-provoking, and in its day especially, not as much today, but in its day especially, a very controversial play. And ask Ernest about his conversation, or written conversation, with the author. I think that would be very
all
interesting.
All 4 words of it.
All 4 words. Thanks so much for being with us. Linda Levin, who plays the role of Mother Marion Ruth, and Alexander Rovarosa.
Perfect.
Who plays the role of Agnes, and director Ernest Williams, in the City Theater production of Agnes of God, opening this Thursday the 5th at City Theater of Independence. I want to thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much.
Day after New Year's. Hope the new year works out well for all of you.
Well,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on this holiday. The Jazz Insider is next. I saw him preparing his show as I came in here. Some great jazz he's going to bring your way to start off the new year. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6. right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet once again at that cross in the road here in a new year, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.